come. Today's business world is fast-paced and ever-changing. Gain a competitive advantage by listening to Mind Your Biz Today, hosted by Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage. Janie is a best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire with over 35,000 hours consulting C-suite executives. She will help you navigate today's business hurdles and maximize your opportunities with thought-provoking discussions with CEOs, business authors, and thought leaders. Learn the latest trends and profit-producing ideas for growing your business. Here's your host, Janie Smith.
Mind Your Biz Today is brought to you by Vistage, the world's leading CEO organization whose member companies outperform the market. Visit Vistage.com today.
Sponsor. Vistage is the CEO organization of 14,000 CEOs worldwide. I personally have been involved with them for many, many years, and if you're out there and you own a business, you need to give Vistage a call. They are terrific at helping you grow your business. I am very excited about today's show. We're going to talk about the economy, the economic forecast, and the thing that's bugging everybody and keeping everyone awake at night. First, I want to remind you to go to mindyourbiztoday.com, our website, and send us your emails, send us your comments and questions. And certainly, if you want a show dedicated to a specific topic, by all means, let us know at mindyourbiztoday.com. Now, I just said we wanted to talk about the things that are keeping us awake at night, and I don't know about you, but the recession has ended, according to foxbusiness.com and some articles in the Wall Street Journal. U.S. stocks rise as recession is called over. These are headlines that I see. And then in the next day, I see headlines that say housing starts have slowed. And it's so contradictory. We don't know which is up and which is down and which way it's all going. So I am super excited to have Alan Bolio with us today. Alan Bolio is a principal in the Institute for Trend Research, and they are one of the country's most informed economists. Alan Bolio and his brother Brian Bolio provides economic forecasts, and get this, ladies and gentlemen, 96% accuracy on their forecasts. And I want to tell you that I can personally attest to this. I have been listening to these guys for well over 10 years, and they are right on the money nearly every time. And if they get it wrong, they usually just get it slightly wrong, not dramatically. So these guys are a force to be reckoned with, and I will, when I get Alan on, I'll have him give you their contact information, because when you hear what Alan has to say today and how they do their work, you will want to know more about the Institute for Trend Research. So welcome, Alan. Are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, you know, award-winning, best-selling author. I mean, how could I not be excited about sharing some time with you?
Oh, I love that. Plug for plug. Good job there, Alan.
Well, we've known each other a long time.
That's right. Well, let's start, because our audience, I'm sure, is interested in some of these concerns. And one of the ones, because we're approaching an election, this whole idea of the stimulus package, has it been a success? Should we do another one? So, in your view, what can we expect out of the proposed $50 billion stimulus package the president is now proposing?
Well, you know, that's a great question to start with, because it looks forward as well as backward, and it raises a number of points at the same time. What we can look forward to, the short answer is that some people will benefit from a $50 billion stimulus package. It will provide for some tax breaks for some small businesses who qualify, and they'll certainly welcome that. It's something that will be pushing on a string in another regard, because part of that money is to provide, I think it was $30 billion for smaller banks to be able to have some cash to lend out. That's really not the problem. The problem is a lack of demand. There's already a lot of cash in banks. They're just waiting for demand to pick up. So some of it will be good, Janie. Some of it will be bad. What worries me more than anything, and it may seem like a trifling sum these days, which is pretty funny when you think about it, $50 billion being a trifling sum, adds to the federal deficit. We are drowning in red ink. So to put a few more pebbles on top of the pile, you may say, what's a few pebbles? But Well, $50 billion here, $50 billion there, pretty soon we're talking about how are we ever going to pay this off? Actually, we're already at that point, and we're going in the wrong direction.
At night, as we hear this news, is that one of these $50 billion expenditures is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, one of the things I think about when I hear about this let's do something for small business, I sometimes wonder if the administration understands sub-S. You know, if I earn over $250,000, you're going to take it from me so that you can give it to me on the business side. It's like robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Well, that's exactly right, Janie. And one of our friends just was on a commission that did a study, and 73% of manufacturing in this country goes through small businesses, sub-S, and partnerships and sole proprietorships. So while we are talking about needing to create jobs and help people, we're also talking about taxing them more at the same time.
It's taxing the same people, so it's really smoke and mirrors, but it's supposed to look like something beneficial.
Well, that's right. It's somewhat schizophrenic. And when you think about it, when you want to tax rich people, I don't want to get into really presidential bashing. I'm sure that's why you called me. But one of the things that all politicians have a tendency to do is not connect all the dots. And this is just an example. He said, rich people should be taxed more because they'll just save the money and not spend it. Where do we save our money? Well, we either save it in equities or we save it in banks or it's in mutual funds, but somewhere it's put in play, it's borrowed against. So while we're saving money, which is supposedly bad, we want to give banks more money so that they can lend it out. It sort of seems like we somehow need to filter through the government for it to be effective, and I just don't understand that.
I don't understand it either. So here's another one. When can we expect unemployment to finally come down? You know, we get these reports, and one day it says, oh, it's a little nick. Oh, this is better than expected, and it's some fraction of a point, but we're supposed to get all excited about it. So when can we expect unemployment to actually come down?
Well, it won't come down quickly, and it will be years, and I mean years, before we see it come down to what you and I were taught was full employment of 6%. I believe, Janie, that over the next 2 or 3 years, we will be slowly creating jobs. But we will not get back to the employment level we had before this recession in that 2 or 3 year time frame. It's just not going to happen. We would, as a nation, have to create 250,000 jobs a month for over 3 years to get back to where we were. And with all the uncertainty, and that's really, in my mind, one of the huge issues of the day. With all this uncertainty, my clients, and I'm sure yours too, are going, we don't know whether this is a good time to hire. They're adding hours, but they don't want to add people because of all the changes that are coming, the uncertainty that abounds. And so they freeze in terms of hiring. Very few people are bringing people back. And so that number is going to take years, literally years, to wind its way back down to 6%. Even the administration doesn't call for it to come down to below, I think it's 7% by 2014.
So that is further complicated by the issue of everybody sitting on cash because of what you just said. The uncertainty causes people not to spend, businesses not to spend, not on labor, not on equipment. And so it's just frightening where we are today. So when you look at specific industries, is there any particular industries that you think will be coming back sooner than others?
Sure, and that's a pretty exciting thought to get into because there are good things going on too, and it's important that we look there. The medical industry, on a rate of change basis, on a year-over-year basis, will be doing well, and people will be making money in the years to come because of demographics and because there's a constant need. In the manufacturing area, we're going to find that high-tech, small-run firms are going to be doing very well. They should be doing well now, and they should continue to do well. And I don't know if you've heard this in the press or in talking to your clients, but there's some manufacturing that's coming back to this country from the Pac Rim for a number of reasons, but most importantly, they're able to produce now in the United States on a competitive basis with a lot of the production that goes on in China because it's a shift in cost basis. People here that used to want to work and have to work for $22 an hour, $25 an hour, are now willing to work for $13 an hour. Well, that makes a big difference because our labor content here in a widget is so much less than the labor content of a widget in China. With the high-tech advantage, without the extra 4 months of inventory, without the transportation costs, it all balances out, and there's an increased potential for more manufacturing back in this country.
Yeah, and the other thing, I agree with you. I not only hear about it, but I experience it with our clients, that those who had gone to China and are bringing it back in, they're bringing it back in. Not only are they saving transportation costs, but they're finding they can deliver better to their customers. They don't have the quality issues that they sometimes have with China. They have much better shot at on-time delivery. Some of the things that the customers demand are much better fed from within the U.S. So it is a very exciting and interesting thing to see manufacturing come back. Again, you know, sort of like unemployment, the rate at which this moves up will be very interesting. Have you any sense of that as you hear rumors or not rumors, but as you hear more about manufacturing coming back, would you venture to guess a rate of expansion here in manufacturing?
No, I won't give you a rate, but I think the time frame is that it begins now and slowly builds, and over the next 3 to 5 years, it will be making the news and will be feeling much better about the prospects of manufacturing in this country. And I'll add one more thing to your list, which is very accurate. IP, intellectual property, is still an issue, and intellectual property theft has not gone away. And so a lot of firms have decided that enough's enough. You know, they've given away enough secrets to last a lifetime. Let's bring it back to South America, Mexico, the U.S., somewhere where the laws are tighter, or at least they're enforced.
Yep. It's very interesting in what's going to China. And any other countries that you see in play where work has gone out but it's coming back besides China?
Mexico is one of those. Mexico got hit horribly by the PAC rim. And there are even, not stories, but there are even actual Chinese manufacturing that have moved their manufacturer to Mexico because it's better suited to reaching the United States. So Mexico is certainly a nation that will gain from this.
That's very interesting. So China is now manufacturing in Mexico because they have North America presence. For the very things that I just described, it makes it easier for on-time delivery and some quality control. It's much easier to oversee.
Right. And all of that works to the U.S.'s advantage because the more stable that Mexico is, the better we are and the less. And I know you live in Florida and I live in safe New Hampshire, and we really don't have a problem with a lot of illegal Canadians coming over the border. But the more prosperous Mexico is, the more that things calm down on that political front, which would be a good thing.
Yeah, there's so much for us to worry about and be concerned about. And you know, turning on the news at night is a proceed at your own risk kind of experience, isn't it? There's just, what do we worry about the most? What impacts us? And again, I'm most influenced by the, sort of the seesaw effect of the news. You know, it's up, it's down, it's up, it's down. It's very interesting. Well, Alan, we're going to get ready for a short commercial break, and then we're going to come back. I have a few more questions for you I'd love to hear your view on. And you mentioned that I live in Florida, so it'll be interesting because this radio station reaches Floridians. So let's talk a little bit about that after the commercial break, which is Vistage, our sponsor, and they're going to be giving us a message. And by the way, we're going to have some Vistage members on in the coming weeks to talk about their experience. So we're going to pause. And Alan, can you hang in there for a bit and be back with us in just a few minutes?
I certainly will.
Okay, well, we're going to go to commercial break now. Be back with you in about a minute or two. Okay.
As the CEO, are you avoiding tough decisions? How can you do more with less? Who do you turn to for real advice? What do 14,000 companies who have unparalleled access to new business perspectives, innovative strategies, and actionable ideas have in common? Vistage. Vistage is the world's leading CEO organization who offers their members business coaching benefits not available anywhere else. To see if you qualify for membership in Vistage, Florida, contact Chip Webster at 1-800-733-4832 or visit Vistage.com today.
Here is Janie Smith with Mind Your Biz Today.
Okay, and we're back. Thank you, Vistage, again for sponsoring us, and we're excited to have Alan Bolio of the Institute for Trend Research in New Hampshire. Again, if you just tuned in, Alan is one of the country's most informed economists. His Economic Institute has a forecast accuracy rate of 96%. Not too many economists can boast that, and I'd like to footnote this by saying Alan and his brother Brian that run the Institute, not only are they incredibly sound economists, but they're economists with a great sense of humor, which we certainly appreciate. So Alan, a couple more questions for you. It's so interesting. I'm sure you've seen the news. You know, U.S. recession ended, and then the next day housing starts is up, and then the next day housing starts have slowed.
Right.
Not so sure. So let's talk a little bit about that. What can Florida expect in the housing market? And then we'll talk about commercial, but let's talk a little bit about the housing market here, because we're all certainly hurting in South Florida. Property values are probably between California, Florida, and Nevada. I think the three of us are neck and neck for who's worse off in terms of loss of property value. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, nothing that's going to invite anybody to write up for today. The process in the states you mentioned in particular is that it'll be a slow turn. It's sort of like every bankruptcy, only in reverse, and like every recovery. It's slowly, 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 then all of a sudden. And what's going to happen is that there's going to be a long period of stability before there's any meaningful rise. We are seeing some numbers pick up in California. We are seeing some improvement in activity, but there's such a large shadow inventory that it's hard to get optimistic, and it would be wrong to get overly optimistic at this point. What we would suggest that everybody do is just understand that it is a slow trough, so don't move through a trough. This is not a time to panic. This is not the time to say it's time to get rid of my house. I don't have any choice. Hang on for as long as you can, because giving up at the trough is always the most painful experience. The state of Florida has a tremendous advantage in that it is a state where people will be moving to. The country is getting older, and that really begins in 2013. That's not so far away, unless the Mayans are right. But let's assume they're not. And since it is soon, people will start retiring. That's one of the go-to states. It'll be Texas and Arizona and Florida, the Carolinas, some halfbacks. We're going to find that those states will see a nice migration of people who have equity in their homes. It's a myth that all the equity has gone out of seniors. They will sell their homes in a better environment in 2 years. They will be boogieing down to Florida, and they'll be buying a house, and people that wait will be benefiting. In our jargon, the business cycle trend is positive for Florida right now. The rates of change are heading towards zero. So the year-over-year activity is negative, but less negative through time. The amount of Florida permits, for instance, has actually begun to edge up on a annual basis and on a monthly basis. It varies, but when you smooth it out on an annual basis, there are already signs that things are getting better. The worst thing that anybody could do now is panic. This is the time to just be patient.
Yeah, I think we're all past panic. We're all just numb at this point.
Better than making a wrong move. I'm sorry that it's numb. I probably shouldn't laugh, but it just struck me funny. They are turning the corner, and sales will improve, and housing values will continue to improve. It's just going to be, unfortunately, a slow process.
Could you say more about, you called my attention with a statement you made a minute or two ago. Could you say more about the senior, it's a myth that the senior market has no equity. That's a very interesting point.
Well, sure. The reality is that most people think that home values have come down so far on so many people that we're all busted and there's no equity left in homes. One of the things that I show folks as I travel around is that household net worth as a percent of disposable personal income, which is just a way to make sure that it's adjusted for wages, which are essentially adjusted for inflation. So it's a way to kind of level things off through time. You look at that household net worth today, and you compare it to previous decades, and we're right where we were in the last half of the 1980s and the first half of the 1990s. So we had that great bubble. I mean, it was a fantastic bubble. It was a gigantic rush, sugar high. And now that the high's gone, we're feeling like we've lost everything. But the reality is we're just back to where we were before the bubble began, which means spending went on, life went on, people went to college, people got married. I mean, it was life.
Yeah,
and we're just going to see that kind of life again. And that's really, I know I can prattle on too long, Janie, so interrupt me anywhere along the way, but that's really the challenge for today's business leaders. If we think that life will be like it's been for the last 10 years, we'll completely mismanage our companies. We have to look back to the 80s in a lot of regards. We have to go back to the 70s in a lot of regards with interest rates and inflation of the 70s, which was pretty mild, but moving up, and manage our companies that way, not based upon the fact that we had a bubble and we desperately want it back again. Not going to happen. That we want that kind of fantastic wealth again in everybody's household like it was an ATM. Not going to happen. So we market differently, we manage differently, and we set different expectations as we go forward.
What can you say then about the commercial market? We talked about the Florida residential. What about commercial?
That's ugly, and that's going to lag. That always lags another year behind everything else, unfortunately.
Okay, so they haven't felt the worst of their pain yet, or they are in their pain now?
They're in their pain, and the pain's not going to go away anytime soon, I'm afraid. When we look at the value of a total commercial construction going on in the state of Florida, it's still, rough round numbers, 40% below year-ago levels. There's no improvement going on in the rates of change. The dollar values are awful. You look at the number of projects going on in the state of Florida, because sometimes the dollar values can mislead you. We find a similar situation. The number of projects are down about 60% from the year before, 55% from the year before. There's just no sign of life there yet, and there can't be any sign of life until housing improves first, because that's the leading indicator. You're going to find the employment situation in Florida slowly get better, and then you'll find people back in offices and back in those empty buildings and back in the office and warehouse. But it is a slow, painful process, so that whole commercial realm has got another good year ahead of it of unhappiness.
So one more question. Well, not one. I have three more questions, but one more to answer, and then I'll go on to the other ones. Will we be double-dipping as we proceed?
That's a great thought, and the answer is no, categorically no. It's going to be scary. It's going to flatten out. It's going to feel, to some people, like this must be a double-dip, but technically, if we view double-dip as entering back into recession, the answer is no.
Oh, that's the best news I've heard all day. I'm going to just take that thought and not pick up any more newspapers and not turn the news on for a while so I can go with that high news of yours.
Well, that's not a bad idea. And I think that the second best thing that could happen to most of us is to get through the midterm elections, because the uncertainty being created by a lack of leadership, and I don't mean that in a negative manner against either party, but we don't know which party will be leading us, and we don't know what agenda they're going to set.
Yeah, and I don't think it's, I think you can go right ahead and say it. You do mean that, relative.
I try not to, sway people to one party or the other, but there's an old axiom that says even a bad law is better than no law. If you're going to pass a new law, at least tell me what it is so that I can adjust and start getting creative about how I'm going to get around it. But
they would love to tell you what it is if only they knew.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. That's exactly the uncertainty. Are you going to raise my taxes or not? And by how much? Just tell me. For goodness sake, just tell me.
And the estate tax, all of that. Everything is up in the air, and nobody has a clue. It's really pathetic. Well, I'm going to ask you two more questions. One is, this is not a financial show, and I know you don't give financial advice, but just for kicks, is it time to put money back into equities based on the trends you're seeing today?
Thank you for the disclaimer. I appreciate that, Janie. And the answer is, if you're going to put money into equities, do so into equities that are very stable. Don't go in there looking for the dot-com kind of quick kill. That's not going to happen. Look for companies that have boring dividends. I mean, something that pays dividends in the 4% range, get that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to sit there. You'll have some positive cash stream. You'll stay ahead of inflation, and you'll go back to safe investing.
4%
we don't see a bull market coming for a while yet.
I think anything's fine 4% right now in this economy.
Well, you can do that. You can go to Caterpillar, for instance, and get 4%, I think.
I'm just saying, compared to the CD rate and the interest rate and all that, I mean, it's really hard. If you're sitting on cash, it's really hard to find any place to put it. So that's very good advice. Find the safe and boring equities that pay dividends and sit there for a while until we hear anything new and better as it slowly creeps up. So I have just a few more minutes, but I wanted to ask you, in view of what you're seeing in the trends, since this show is about helping businesses, what advice do you give the small to medium-sized business owner in today's environment? And not just that, for the C-suite executives because we have listeners in both areas. What would you give them advice? What would be your number one, two, or three tips for advice in view of where we are today?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Number one, in my view, is to make sure that everybody that works for you is as sharp as they can be, and by that I mean training. Make sure that you have accelerated training programs, fill your skill gaps, have everybody ready to drive maximum efficiencies in your organization. Number two, look for areas where you are weak and either get that piece of machinery in or fill that gap in your operations. You need to beef up your marketing program, spend money and beef it up. This is a no-forgiveness economy for the next few years. Everybody's going to have to be as sharp as they can be in all their verticals, and that's going to be selling a new way into a new environment, spend money on marketing, and thoughtfully position yourself. And this sounds shamelessly like it just because I'm on your show, but you know me. You know that I do this everywhere I go. If you don't know what your competitive advantages are, you will get beaten by your competitor who does, because this is a no fooling around, no prisoners environment.
I thank you for the plug again, Alan, but I agree with you. We watch clients who embrace the competitive advantage work increase their close rates 20, 30, 40%. We have one guy in Boston said he's got his revenues up 110% because he got crystal clear on his competitive advantages. You have to position yourself better today than ever before.
And then shout it from the rooftops. You got to spend money to do that, and you have to be willing to spend the money to shout it.
Okay, so Alan, we're getting ready to close here. I want to give you a few seconds here to tell the audience what's your website, how people contact you.
Sure, you can go to www.itreconomics.com, itreconomics.com, and you'll be able to contact me that way or anybody else at the office. You can find out more information about ITR.
And your book.
We're about. And the book is Make Your Move. And Make Your Move is available through our website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you pick it. You'll be able to get it online through there. It's gotten nice reviews.
You've
great
been
reviews.
Listening to Mind Your Biz Today with Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage, best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire. Tune in next Friday at 4:30 p.m. for another great program here on 880 The Biz.
How would you like a real advantage over novice investors and